This episode of the How of Business is brought to you by TransUnion Shareable for Hires. Hiring great people is critical to your small business success. TransUnion Shareable for Hires enables immediate access to employment screening tools that deliver reports in minutes from a trusted source. Use the code HowOfBiz50 at checkout to save 50% on your first screening at shareable.com/biz. Or you can just text the word biz to 31996 and I will reply with the link. TransUnion Shareable for Hires, helping small businesses make big decisions.
Welcome to the How of Business with Henry Lopez and David Begin, the podcast that helps you start, run, and grow your small business. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the How of Business. Henry Lopez with you here today, and my guest is Walt Brown. Walt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Henry.
Looking forward to it. We're going to chat about Walt's entrepreneurial story, how he got to where he is today. And then he's going to share how he helps his clients with attracting, engaging, empowering, and retaining great team players to build that dream business that we all want. If you want to receive more information about the How of Business, including links to show notes page for this episode, just text the word biz, B-I-Z, to 31996. So Walt Brown is an entrepreneur, a business coach, a certified entrepreneur operating system, or EOS, you may have heard it referred to. He's a certified implementer for EOS and an author. He started his career as a CPA and a corporate auditor, but during the last decade, Walt has helped transform the culture of more than 160 organizations across the country through his work helping companies install effective organizational operating systems. These are systems that attain and maintain yes to the seven questions, which is going to be at the heart of our conversation. That'll make more sense in a moment. It's his greatest pleasure to help owners and companies sharpen or even resurrect their original dream culture to get back the company they always dreamed of having, to create that place they always wanted to work for or work at. Walt is the author of The Patient Organization, Attracting, Engaging, and Empowering Team Players. The Patient Organization is kind of like a textbook for the seven questions, seven promises framework designed for determined business owners like us who won't settle for anything less than building and maintaining their dream company. So we're going to dive into this seven questions, seven promise framework after he shares his entrepreneurial story. Walt lives in the Raleigh, North Carolina area. So once again, Walt Brown, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Henry.
Great to have you, sir. So you started in an exciting career as a CPA / corporate auditor, if I have it right.
That's correct. An accounting nerd.
An accounting nerd. And what did you back then think I'll do that in the corporate level forever? Or did you have entrepreneurial aspirations? Tell me about those early days a little bit.
Yeah, I always had entrepreneurial aspirations, and I just saw accounting as a place that I could learn a lot and see a bunch of businesses. And, you know, if you're in business, you need to understand the accounting. Mm-hmm. So it led to there. I always dreamed of starting my own company, come from a long lineage of entrepreneurs, like a great-great-grandfather back in the 1800s had the largest coach and wagon factory south of Philadelphia in Greenville, South Carolina.
Wow.
You know, lost it during the Civil War, but that's a different story. But you know, it's just like that's kind of the genes go way back. Grandfather had a general store. They were farmers, all that kind of stuff. American dream stuff, you know.
Were your parents business owners?
No, they were not. My father was the number two guy for a really well-run department store chain. Started off one chain and went to 16 stores. And I was always reminded, the gentleman who owned the company was Carl Hudson, an absolute gentleman. My father used to always say, remember, you don't spell Brown, H-U-D-S-O-N. And it wasn't a negative thing. It was just like, recognize your place when you're in the store. You know, this is not your company. This is someone else's company. Yeah, I might be really high up, but it's not yours. And I don't say that drove me, but I grew up around a a retail table that talked retail and talked business all the time. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So then tell me about Leyline, that business, and what led to you starting it.
Well, interesting. After four audit seasons at Ernst & Winnie, took the IQ exam and scored low enough when I was allowed to start my own company. And what I was doing at that point, I was racing sailboats and I was racing bicycles. You know, I really value my days on this earth and I don't like to waste them. So I was looking around for a company I could start. I would have started a bicycle racing catalog business, but I'd gotten Performance Bicycle Shop as a client. They were a big mail order company back in the day. Mm-hmm. And ethically, it wouldn't be right to, you know, look at your company, look at your client's books, and then go into business to compete right. against them. And I was racing sailboats at the same time. And I was trying to order some very specific parts. And I called Lands End. And, you know, some people remember this. This is back in 86. And the person on the end of the phone was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm really not interested in helping you. Huh. And I was like, there is an opportunity. And so Leyline is a sailing term and started in the sailboat racing business, selling stuff to households that race sailboats. And up underneath that was when there's a sailboat being raced in a house, there's normally a horse being shown. Mama and daughter have horses. And so what we really, the real business was importing and distributing and building markets around European horse brands, even though the cover was sailing.
Okay, so you spun me up there. Are you saying, were you joking, or are you saying that really in households where people sail, there's also horse
yes. interest? Yes, right. That's the affluence you're dealing with.
Interesting. I see. Okay. Yeah. Got it. So you can pretty much assume that market may be also in the equestrian market as well.
Correct. Maybe not in Texas with the sailboats, but... Anywhere, right. You know, Connecticut, right. places like that.
Those things are often connected. Okay. Got you there. Yeah. So I'm assuming this was a traditional paper printed catalog, mail order type thing. Is that correct?
Yes. We started out with Polaroids and cutting actual film to do four color printing. And then it went all the way through to I bought Leyline.com from a telephone vendor in 1998.
Wow.
They called and said, and they were selling. I said, how much? They said $360. And this was Thursday. Can I call you back on Tuesday?
Jeez. Unreal.
Yeah. So then it became a .com. And actually, that's when it made it a heck of a lot harder, because we used to be opinion leaders and you'd print and you put stuff out and you could, that message would hold for 6 months, a year.
I see.
And then you put it on the web, you print and people copy it the next day. You know, so it really got, it was like a race to the bottom on that side.
Interesting.
The Western side stayed really strong. So it's fun.
Why did you decide to exit that business?
I was traveling like 100 days a year. And while still racing sailboats, like 78 days a year, I had a couple of young children, like you and I were talking about, Jane and Marion. And the phone rang one day. It was a family office. Have you ever thought about selling the company? And I'm like, well, of course, you're always setting up your company to sell if you're running it properly. And
agreed.
I said, yeah. You know, and they came in and gave us a good price. Knowing what I know now, Henry, I wouldn't have sold it.
Because?
I just had great people and I was sort of doing everything I do now, but naturally. And I didn't realize that I could have stepped away from that business and done anything else I wanted to do. And my folks would have run it beautifully. Mm. You know, it's just
okay.
Like,
so you had not learned the lesson yet. You thought you were integral to the business and... You had to make every critical decision.
Well, I was still 45 years old. And it was just so close, you know, and it was nothing wrong with, but it, you know what I mean? It was, now I look back with perspective to seeing other teams that my clients have, and like, boy, I was pretty lucky. So,
It still an existing business?
Not Leyline side. Okay. Another piece, you know, kid ran into the ground, typical stuff.
See.
Here's the 747. It's full. Thanks for full. Just all you got to do is get on the intercom and talk to the customers.
Right.
You know, shut the door, close the intercom off, started pulling on the yokes.
Too funny.
Oh, God. We all have those lessons. Entrepreneur.
Yep. So that's when you segued into coaching and consulting. Is that right?
Yeah. After 20 years, people said, what are you going to do next? And I said, I don't know. And they were like, have you ever thought about coaching or facilitation? Those exact words. And it's like touchy-feely stuff. I'm an accounting statistics guy. And then, no, you'd be really good. Yeah, so I ended up, I bought a franchise called the Alternative Board.
Okay.
Which dealt with pretty small companies, and you would put them into like a peer board environment every month, and you would meet with the owner and do like strategic thinking. And very quickly I ended up with three boards with 11 people on each board. So it was like 33 business owners you're meeting with every month. It was wonderful. But that's led to where I am now.
Mm-hmm. When did you start getting involved with the OS, with the traction stuff with from Gino Wickman?
Well, we sold Leyline August 7th, 2006. And I launched Tab on September 9, 2006. Wow. And then late into 2007, I had these clients that were part of Tab going, hey, Walt, you know, we've worked on the strategic plan for the last year. I feel super comfortable with where we're going. My board is saying go, go, go. And they asked if I could help them pivot. And I said, yeah, sure, I can do that. And I had nine of those asks, and I went in and I met with six different companies. And at the beginning of the meeting, they were all up at the table, all excited. And then by the end of the day, they were like leaning back in their chairs, their, you know, heads were back at the ceiling, their tongues were lolling out. And you could just feel them going, here we go again, another strategic planning retreat that's going to go nowhere.
Yeah.
And at that point, Henry, I was like, I don't have it. And I went back and talked to my clients, said, I don't have it, but I'm going to go start looking. And I'm reading all the books, Good to Great, Built to Last, all that stuff back in that time frame. And all of them were like 30,000 foot books that really weren't bringing things to the ground. And I'm looking and I can't find anything. And then I'm on my mountain bike one day and the phone rings. And I look down at it and it's a number from Detroit. And I said, what the heck? I'll answer it. And I answered the phone and this voice says, you know, hello, this is Walt. Walt, this is Don Tinney calling from the EOS process. It's like, hey, Don, how's it going? And Don goes in this little spiel. And I said, whoa, Don, stop. Now, real quick. Don Tinney was Gino Wickman's wingman.
Okay.
EOS would not be what it is without Don Tinney, period. It's like he was
kind of his implementer.
He was the first implementer and his first integrator.
Yeah.
And I said, Don, you know, you're calling me from Detroit. You're on my cell phone. How'd you get my number? And he says, I Googled you. And wow. I said, really? What search term did you use? He says, Business Coaches Raleigh. And I said, oh, really? What page was on? And Don says, Google search page 9. 9? How many guys have you called?
My goodness.
And Don says, you're the only one. And it came from his heart. And I was like, you are sick. I love sick people. I'll talk to you. And that was then, you know, got on the phone with him the next Tuesday. And he took me through it over the phone. And I was like, wow, this is exactly what I'm looking for. And, you know, jumped in there, got it going. And sold my Tab franchise. Once my client saw how well it worked, I just been focused on that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
What did he see in you? It was just online at that point. What was it that stood out to him that he called you?
You know, I don't know. He's just like, he always says to me, you're just my brother from a different mother. That's what he calls me. you know, and I've never really dug that deep. He's just one of these guys that had a list and he was going to make some phone calls and
sure. He
was going to research it first. And I think he just said the tone of the website and just, I don't know Henry exactly, but
yeah,
just a super nice.
Well, he must have read integrity and going about it. I mean, they were looking obviously for those key initial people at that time to make sure they did it the right way. Right.
Yeah. And they still are, you know, the core values are help first, do the right thing, do what you say, you know, humbly confident, you know, that's who he was looking for.
Yeah. All right. So then the 7 questions, 7 promises, how did that evolve for you?
Oh God, I feel like I missed a story time. This was really cool. I guess around client number 80 or 90, I really kind of lose track of it, but you can peg the time. Do you remember a few years ago when everyone was really complaining about millennials?
Yes, well, they still are, but yeah.
They still are, but that whole like stereotype was going on. And I was looking at the millennials and the companies that I had that were just packed with millennials, and they all just seemed to be ready to take over the world. You know, I wasn't seeing that stereotype. And what I did is I asked my clients for permission to like do focus groups and engage with these millennials. And that, you know, about 80 or 100 clients had gone through the program with me by that point. And it wasn't a super sophisticated like group, but we had good enough conversations. And then finally, through the conversations, they basically said, what we're doing in EOS is answering these seven questions and then allowing, you know, me to stay aligned to them. It was just really, that's where it came from. Wasn't my work. It was just paying attention that there was a pattern in there.
Right.
Yeah,
it's interesting on the millennial. We've touched on that topic quite a bit on my show. And one of the key takeaways that I think ties to as we get into the seven questions, we both have kids that are in that range, that millennial range.
Yep.
I think if we're like, what it boils down to is they've figured out what they saw us fight through and struggle through a different paradigm. They figured out that doesn't quite work.
Right.
In other words, they're smarter than we are. They saw that we were still living in that generation where we thought, you know, we'd work somewhere forever and we'd be taken care of. And, you know, that was the value proposition.
Right.
They've evolved beyond that.
Very true. And that's also, you know, people say, oh, they don't know what they want. No, they know exactly what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You're just not giving it to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what the issue is. They grew up with rubrics, you know, and they are observing and taking note. And it's interesting.
Yep. All right. So if you were to stop and think of a couple of characteristics, personal characteristics, that have led to your success in life and in business so far, what would those be?
Characteristics. I don't suffer fools very well. So
that's helped you?
Well, I think what it is that, you know, you look at my DISC profile, I'm a pretty high C, which means I got fairly high levels of compliance. I'll follow the rules when the rules make sense. And, you know, so I'm just not very good with regards to, you know, seeing a pattern and, you know, people aren't willing to see or maybe I'm just stubborn. Maybe I think I'm a know-it-all. I don't know really what it is, Henry, but it's just like, hey guys, you know, if the rule makes sense, I will absolutely follow it. But if it doesn't, I'm going to make up my own rule.
But people like that, people like you, that you sniff out things that aren't quite, you sniff out things that are BS pretty early on. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, just a high model and lever like that. And I like to put together patterns is another characteristic, you know, see trends. That's always been kind of there and had a pretty good nose for seeing where the next gap is.
Mm-hmm. And then you expressed it early on about you want to get the most out of every day. That's been part of it, I have to think.
Yeah, I don't like to waste. I don't like to waste any time, you know, and it's, I'm actually pretty spiritual and stuff like that. And I just, you know, recognize the days on this earth are very precious.
Mm-hmm. So, wonderful. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for sharing that. All right. So let's get into it. What is I'd like you to introduce the seven questions, seven promise framework, and then we'll start there. Just introduce that for me if you would.
Yeah. So we refer to it as like a 7-6-1 framework model, meaning that there's basically seven questions that we need to answer as an organization. And then we take those answers and make a promise to our to the people in our organization through strengthening in an organizational operating system, which is the six. I'll give that in a second, to create one single organization. And so the key point is you know, in culture and in an organization, you know, if you got 200 people and 99 people believe one thing and 101 believe something else, you have two cultures, you have two organizations. You know, you've already been divided. And getting ready to be conquered. And our goal is that if you can get on the same page, what yes means the seven basic things, and then work really, really hard to maintain an organization that's always allowing those seven things to manifest, you can maintain that one single culture. And so you can go through the questions either way, but I'm going to go through them backwards today. It's we want to be able to make sure that people understand what it means to be balanced at our company. We would like for them to understand what it means to take control of their own development and what development looks like, what it means to be heard, what it means to be measured, what it means to be accountable, what they're believing in and whether they belong. And the other direction is we want to make sure that when they come in, they know what it means to belong. They are clear what they're believing in with regards to strategy and priorities. It's absolutely clear what they're accountable for. That's an open conversation. they're agreeing on how they're measured, they're active in the way that their opinions are heard, they're active in their development, and they understand what balance looks like. And they can go, yeah, those are all seven things I agree with. I fit here. Mm-hmm. And also give an opportunity to self-select out if they don't fit.
Right. Right.
That makes, is that clear?
Yeah. The sixth part is what I'm still not clear. Seven, six, yes. One. So the six is.
The sixth part is there's with, this is, it's not a pitch for EOS. There's EOS has, is an organizational operating system. You have to have an operating system in place. That's basically the system and institutions and the rhythms that allow you to keep your promise that you make. And that's an organizational operating system. There's 40X, there's scaling up, there's Rockefeller mm-hmm. Habits, there's EOS, there's Holacracy. I mean, every company has an organizational operating system. You just might not have named it that.
Right.
But, you know, and the best ones allow you to maintain, yes, the seven questions. That's what the six means.
I'm still not getting why it's six.
Oh, six, EOS has six key components.
Oh, okay. All right. Got it. The vision. Yeah, in the circle. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The circle. Yeah.
Got
that's
it. Got it. Got it. Okay. All right. Now that makes sense.
Yeah. It would have been great if I had a visual here.
Exactly. Imagine if you will. Yeah. This is Henry Lopez, and I would like to take a moment to introduce you to our show sponsor, TransUnion Shareable for Hires, the online employment screening service for small business. As a small business, making great hires is critical to your success. And when it comes to hiring, background checks are a must-have. Unlike big companies with big HR departments, small businesses may not have the resources to manage background checks, access to screening tools, or are skittish about the screening process. But now there is TransUnion Shareable for Hires. It's an online employment screening service built specifically to help small businesses quickly screen applicants with reliable data from a trusted source. With traditional screening services, you might wait days or even weeks to get results. But with Shareable for Hires, you'll get immediate access to powerful employment screening tools that enable you to fast track your hiring process so that you can get back to business. Within minutes, you'll receive reports from TransUnion containing critical information about an applicant's credit history and criminal background. And reports you receive are compliant with state and federal consumer reporting laws. It's free to sign up, no hidden fees, and as low as $35. Start your on-demand screening at shareable.com/biz and use the code HOWOFBIZ50 at checkout and you'll receive 50% off your first screening. Or just text BIZ to 31996 and I will send you the link and discount code. So one of the things, you know, as I was going through this and studying this, and of course, you know, a lot of this is you've compiled this over years of understanding this, as you explained. For a small business owner, I think one of the challenges sometimes, Walt, is that we tend to be, as a small business owner, a lot in our head. We haven't matured yet enough in our business to, you know, put to writing what our mission is or why, what our why is. How do you help a small business owner that's in that, at that phase with getting to this next level of, I don't know, I'll call it transparency for lack of a better word. You understand what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Cause it's, you know, when you're five or seven people, it's pretty easy to have the conversations and just sort of absorb that you've got the right culture and the right mm-hmm. people around you. Right. But it's still, you know, the codification of who you want to surround you, what kind of behaviors and attitudes you want to surround yourself with are basically your core values. And then where you really want to go and what's your future look like is are your beliefs, you know, then clarity around who's accountable for what, how you're measuring success is super important. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we go about listening in the organization? Developing yourself and others, and then what does balance look like? Work-life balance, money, and things. It actually isn't that hard to do. It almost should be easier for. Well, this let me give you a better perspective on that. Is a client of mine, Clay Gilbert, daughter is up in New York City, journalism major at UNC Chapel Hill, and has been up working in marketing agencies for a while. And she's 28 years old, and she was moving from one firm to another. And I was talking to Clay about it as a friend, and he said, I said, have you talked deeply about why she's making the move? She said, no, she just wants to do it. And I said, have you asked her that question through the seven questions? Mm-hmm. You know, why is she moving from one firm to another? He called her. He's a quick start, calls her and went through the seven questions because his team was one of the ones that helped develop them. And within 45 minutes, he had a 2-page email back where she had answered all the seven questions.
Wow.
So the point I'm making is that the answers are right there. You just have to sit down and pull them out. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's not that complicated. It's actually easier to do as an individual than it is with a team. Because with a team, a lot of times there's people there that really don't believe in the seven things you believe in.
Right. Exactly. All right. So of the seven, there's a couple that I wanted to spend a little bit more time on, and then we'll see where we go. But the one on developed, do I understand and embrace how I am developed? That's from the perspective of the employee or the staff member. You know, I really, this crystallized for me with one of our businesses that we started in 2011. It's a self-serve frozen yogurt shop. And so we've got young people working for us, minimum wage type employees. And it's interesting how going into it, I would have thought more so, and this has to do with the millennial conversation as well. I would have thought, you know, pay is the biggest driver. But in fact, what we've heard again and again is that what they appreciate, of course, they want to get paid. But what they appreciate is that we have put together a very comprehensive training program mm-hmm. and have laid out what that path looks like for them. Even for something as simple as somebody who works at a yogurt shop, which is not very complicated.
Yep.
But that feedback has been consistent on how much they value that they know how they will be developed.
And so that training program, is it training through like the different roles or positions that they have through, is that how it's mapped?
That is part of it. It's a pretty flat organization. So there's a staff level person. We call them a yogurista. And then there's a leader, but we have very few of those. And then a manager. So it's really how you will progress through your first 30 days. And then your first 90 days is really what mm-hmm. it's about. Yep.
Yeah.
Everything from what do you have to be, what level of proficiency do you have to show before you're customer facing?
Yep.
You're going to take a test, all of those kind of things.
Yes, exactly. There you go. So, and that's why we're on the exact same page in terms of developed is really what you're describing is just a really, really solid on the job training that's been well developed. You know, so many people and you're doing it for them as opposed to them. And so we take development where, well, yes, we need to have certain training classes. You know, you want to learn how to run Excel or you want to do these different development type of classes. It really is, it hinges more on the word, what are you accountable for
mm-hmm.
and how you're being measured and heard.
Right. It's directly tied to those other two things, right? The accountable when you're measured. Absolutely.
Yes. And then, you know, do they understand the rhythms on how they're heard? And so there's another model that's coming out that I call the organizational cognizance model. And it's in a book captured in the next book that's being printed now is called Death of the Org Chart, Rise of the Organizational Graph. And we think of you have a job that has a purpose statement, but then each job has, I refer to them as positions, Henry,
mm-hmm.
like different roles.
I see.
You know, and if you took your yogurista, you know, this is one of your roles is to greet the customer. What does that mean?
Right.
And one of your roles is to maybe know how to clean the machines. What does that mean? You know, and so we have this model where from your position, who do you turn to get coached in that position?
I see.
You know, and how you measure, what does success look like in there? What systems are you interfacing with? You know, what workflows and processes? We have this whole thing mapped out. So, you know, they can go from, they can say, okay, the skills required for this position are this. And you can actually visualize a path for self-improvement and self-development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, includes the coaching and the mentoring, all that's mapped. So people know what their path is for development.
Yeah, love that. And again, don't want to turn this into a conversation about millennials, but millennials, it's very important. They get how important it is. But I've always found, forget about millennials, I've always found that people, I'm sorry?
Everyone does.
Everybody does. Exactly. I think that's exactly what I'm saying. I have always found that people want, by and large, want to do the right thing. They want to do a good job. It's just a matter of, do you put them in a position to do so? And do you give them the tools that enable them to do so?
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. Millennials are people too.
Exactly. Right. We're not sure about that yet, but anyway, supposedly. Balance is one that I struggle with. So I want to come back to that one. So do I understand and embrace how I maintain balance? And the way you further describe that is that there are three components. There's work life, there's compensation, there's health and wellness. Yep. It's the work life one that certainly coming from the corporate background, I've always found that supposed desire for my corporation to want me to have balance as a lie.
Yeah. So, right.
Right. Because it's just a lie for the most part. Of course, there are corporations doing a much better job at that. But now I bring from that with me to business ownership as a small business owner. I guess maybe the way I'll ask it is, give me some examples of what that looks like in a small business when I provide that balance for an employee.
Yeah. So we'll approach this from two different sides. The business owner work-life balance, which so many of us try to start our own company so we have a little control over our work and life balance. Mm-hmm. Let's hit that. And then the other side is the employees, you know, a CPA firm saying we're going to have a work-life balance to a new associate's joining us, or, you know, an attorney. You're going to work 80 hours a week.
Yeah, there's no balance.
No. And you know, so a lot of it is when we say balance, we're not saying it's somebody else's definition of balance. We're saying as an organization, you know, if you're a company that's going to work 60 hours a week and you're expected to be there at 7 a.m., you need to be absolutely upfront with what that looks like.
I see.
That's number one. And the second piece is your organizational operating system needs to have an ability to be able to adjust that capacity side. This is a total nod to Gina Wickman, and he has a tool called GWC. When we're looking at somebody's in their job, whether they get their job and their positions, whether they want their job and their positions, and then whether they have the capacity, which means time, to do the work. And you know, and that changes. You come along, some people might have something going on in their life and they can only put in 32 hours a week or 40 hours a week. Some people only want to do 40. And, you know, with that GWC tool, we're supposed to be having a clean conversation with them every 90 days going, you know, in your life, what capacity do you have? And, you know, will that capacity allow you to fit in this organization? Will you be balanced? You know, so it's, it just depends on what your organization is and whether you can have the flexibility to adjust the balance. You know, a yogarista needs to be there from a certain time to a certain time, right? If you can't do that, then, you know, that's not going to fit the balance equation of this company. And we love you, but, you know, there's probably a better place for you.
But to your point, if I can interrupt on to transparency, if though the truth is that I expect you to be there an hour earlier and stay an hour later, then I'm not properly communicating that balance. Is that correct? Part? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's what we have to pull out.
Yeah.
You know, what does this job require? Mm-hmm. And be straightforward with it and upfront, mm-hmm. you know, which ties the compensation piece of it. Does that help a little bit?
Yes. Yes, it does. Then from the owner's perspective, you were going to give me that insight as well. Your thoughts.
Yeah. So remember, I am a CPA. I like mm-hmm. rules and I like rules and I like systems that work, and there's no reason to reinvent a system that works. Dan Sullivan, strategic coach. I don't know if you've heard much about Dan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My business partner and co-host David, belongs to strategic coach.
So. Okay. Yeah. So I'm a coach guy too. And he has this thing called, focus free and buffer days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a focus day is when you really are focused on making money. Easy for me. Cause you know, when I'm with a client, I'm making money. A buffer day is sort of when you're doing those in between things, and a free day starts at 12:01 at midnight and stops the next 24 hours after. And you don't log in, you don't look at your phone, you can mow the yard, paint the house, do whatever, but you take a day, a free day. And it might be Saturday or Sunday, you know, spend your Sunday going to church and focus on all that. That's a free day. And it cleans your mind up and gives you that clarity back.
is an incredible model. But you know,
how early in your business ownership were you able to stick to that on a regular basis? Is it supposed to be weekly or does that?
A year ago. I did it, but it wasn't really overt. I did a lot of sailboat racing.
I see. Okay. But that was a free day for you though. If you were on the
boat, yeah.
That was a free day.
Yeah. And I wasn't focused on business. I was working and, you know, so Tuesday would come in and everything would shut off and I was, you know, pretty good about going dark. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you just really have to protect that as a business owner, you know, cause I remember this is a joke is, as entrepreneurs, the day we hate most is Sunday. Mm-hmm. Because we want to get something done and nobody's there to do the work. Right?
That's right. That's why you send off the million emails, right?
Right. Yeah. Just stop logging in on Sunday and gave that time. Stop.
Yeah. You know. It's just hard because, again, you know, we've talked about this on the show many times where we're that type of personality where we go. And we got to take a time to strike that balance. All right. Well, good. Thanks for sharing that. That insight on the balance piece of it and the developed piece. Yeah. So I took the survey on the website, which I encourage people to do as well. Where do I start? So if I take the survey and I'm kind of aligned here, not aligned here, the answer would be no to these three questions. Where do you start with someone?
Right. You know, like I'm with a company tomorrow that it's funny, larger companies, like 1,000 employees are coming into what I do through the 7 questions more than saying, hey, we want to install an operating system. Hmm. A lot of times they already have an operating system.
Right.
So they're doing the 7 questions and we're seeing where they might be, you know, it's a scale of 1 to 10. So you really can't say an 8's better than a 5. All we're doing is measuring relative numbers on that scale. And, you know, very often accountability is like where they're lacking the most. People are saying, you know, we're 1,000 people, not sure really who's doing what. But you know, a lot of times we've done a pretty good job with belong and believe, the values are out there, the plan's pretty well done. But, you know, you take that, and one of the cool things about the whole survey and the whole 7 questions, 7 promise framework approach is we're trying to flip the script, Henry. And be able to say to our folks, honestly, that this is something we're doing for you as opposed to you. Mm-hmm. We took this survey and this is where we were weak. And you know what, guys, we actually have a way to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Here we go. You know what I mean? Where a lot of times you take surveys and there's no way to pull any levers and the employees just say, well, that was a waste of time.
Right.
You know, so.
And then on an ongoing basis, how often should I be measuring this, at least formally measuring it, whether it's in a survey format or whatever? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so the formal survey, you wouldn't want to do it more than twice a year. That's enough, plenty. And then, you know, we're trying to shove in a seasonal conversation where we're taking 15 minutes to sit down with each direct report or individual contributor and go through the 7 questions with them. Hey, do you understand this? And have a little open conversation. Sometimes it takes 30 minutes, but 15 minutes typically once they've gone through it a few times. And so you're able to kind of keep a, you know, a pulse just by having that system in place.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff. We'll keep going here, but just to summarize quickly, we've been talking about the 7 question, 7 promise framework, and it's all about helping us as small business owners attract, engage, empower, and retain those great team players.
Yep.
As I think about that last part, the team, great team players in a small organization, it's even more impactful to keep those great team players motivated, focused, producing, productive, and stay with us instead of jumping to that other firm, right?
Right. Yeah. Because a lot of times a small company, we can't even afford to pay them as much as they can
pay somewhere else. That's right. So these other things are very important to people. And I think we're starting to be much more in tune with that, right?
Yeah. And just as natural small tribes, you know, it's easy to keep the 7 questions clear.
Yes. Yes.
Right. But as you get bigger, you know, it's a lot more difficult when all of a sudden you don't have access to the CEO.
Yeah. It gets diluted. I mean, it's just.
Yep. Right. And so then that's when your operating system is so important to put into play to keep it moving. And that's where a lot of people get stuck, is they can get to that maybe 21 people and it's just really hard for them to keep that flywheel moving because they don't have a system to that keeps the culture going.
Yeah. So. All right. So what's the name of your business now? Yeah, I am a little confused.
Yeah. So it was Walt Brown Co. as just the EOS implementation thing.
That's right. Okay.
And then, but it's 7Q7P now.
Okay. So that's how you're doing business under the 7Q7 Promises brand.
Yes. I promise. That's the last time.
Don't make promises you can't keep.
No, it's for so long I was Walt at Leyline.com, and then I've been Walt at Walt Brown Co. for, 11 years, and now we've shifted over. And so 7Q7P.com is, that's pretty cool, right?
It is.
That's a four. That's a four-letter URL, brother.
I know. And how many of those are available anymore that make any sense? I love it. All right. So we've touched on it, but summarize for us the services that you all offer.
Well, primarily I'm funding everything going forward as just an EOS implementer. So I'm doing 130 days a year in the room with senior leadership teams, helping them install EOS. So that's like my primary day job. But the seven promises framework, all my clients go through it. But there are a lot of people out there who already have an operating system in place. And so what we're focusing on with 7Q7P is running workshops to help them understand the seven questions and to be able to reflect on and basically audit the current operating system they have in place and utilize it to be able to make and keep the promises. Is that clear?
Yeah. And then So some workshops you had mentioned, you've got a workshop coming up. I don't know the timing of this episode will be out by then, but when is that workshop that's coming up?
We're doing quarterly. The kickoff one is in February in
beautiful
Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this episode, if you're listening to it, is December timeframe. So definitely time to check that out. They'll go to the website to get information on that.
7Q7P.com. Thank you, Henry. Perfect.
Easy enough. All right. Books. Your book again that we've been talking a little bit about is The Patient Organization, Attracting, Engaging, and Empowering Team Players. I was curious why that title, The Patient Organization. What do we have to be patient about?
Well, it came from the guy who wrote the book about Red Hat called The Open Organization. And so that kind of got the title moving. Patience from the standpoint of moxie and grit and guts, and knowing when to take the shot, calm. Not in terms of like lazy being patient, but just, lots of nerve.
And sticking to it and staying the course. And when your opportunity opens up, you move.
Yeah. And that's, that would probably be perseverance, patience. So I don't consider myself patient from a business owner standpoint, but, I'm always measuring. I'm always taking aim, and it just never stops. That's what we mean by patient.
Love it. The Patient Organization. Is there another book that comes to mind that you would recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. The Patrick Lencioni's 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, all based on trust. And so, I talk about it some in The Patient Organization, but his stack is without vulnerability-based trust, meaning leave your ego at the door. You're never going to have open and honest debate and conversation. That's not going to lead to any kind of commitment and accountability and results. So 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, it's just a classic, timeless book.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Love it. Thank you for that recommendation. We'll have a link to that as well as to Walt's book on the show notes page to this episode at thehowofbusiness.com. Walt, what's one thing you want us to take away from this conversation that we've had about the 7 questions, 7 promise framework, especially again, as it relates to very small business owners, what's one thing you want to take away from that?
Yeah, I would encourage them to take the survey themselves and reflect on the questions and get to the point where they can answer those questions. Do I know what it means to belong? Figure out what your core values are. And do I understand what it means to believe? And you do have a why. You have a how and the what, to borrow Simon Sinek's model.
Mm-hmm.
What does accountability look like? Go through the 7 questions and carry that framework around with you in your notebook.
And the people who run businesses where they answer those questions affirmatively get what? They get a business that they dreamed of. They get a business that's just better to be a part of, all of those things, right?
They're going to find that they're not constantly trying to get the flywheel moving.
Mm-hmm.
because they're going to find themselves surrounded by people who are interested in keeping it going.
Yeah.
And it's also going to give them a good clean view on who to get rid of when you're surrounded by terrorists in your office.
Got it. And then you can take those free days too.
Yes. That's the goal.
All right. The website again is
7q7p.com.
Wonderful. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for sharing the insights. I just really enjoyed the conversation we've had today.
Yeah, me too. I'm smiling ear to ear, and I hope to meet you someday in person, Henry.
We will stay connected. There's no doubt. And hopefully have you back on the show at some point.
Yeah, with OCOG. Cool.
Absolutely. All right. This is Henry Lopez, and thanks for listening to this episode of The How of Business. My guest today, again, was Walt Brown. We release new episodes every Monday morning, and you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and at our website, thehowofbusiness.com. And you can also just text the word biz, B-I-Z, to 31996 to receive more information. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our show sponsor, TransUnion Shareable for Hires, the online employment screening service for small business.
Thank you for listening to The How of Business. For more information, links, and other resources, please visit thehowofbusiness.com.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.